From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll learn how tomorrow's election could reshape Wisconsin politics and when we might know the results.
I think the race will be so close for president and maybe Senate in Wisconsin that we'll likely need to wait until all of the city of Milwaukee ballots are in to know who the winner will be. So I expect that to happen sometime very early Wednesday morning.
We'll tell you about the constitutional amendment question on the ballot.
Practically speaking, this would not change anything in Wisconsin should this amendment be approved. But Republicans argue that this is part of a broader effort to secure the integrity of elections.
Plus, we'll learn how get-out-the-vote efforts are winding down now that Election Day is upon us. All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Tomorrow, voters will show up to polling stations around the nation to cast their votes. And while most eyes are on the presidential election, here in Wisconsin, there are a lot of smaller races getting attention. Earlier this year, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ordered new legislative maps be drawn, putting an end to one of the worst gerrymandered maps in the U.S., and evening the playing field for Democratic and Republican politicians. John Johnson is a research fellow at Marquette University's Lubar Center, and he's been analyzing the most competitive races in Wisconsin. He joins me now to talk about those races and what to expect after Election Day. John, thank you so much for being here.
It's nice to be back.
To start here, this is the first election in more than a decade where we're likely to see some major changes to the Wisconsin legislature. Give us a rundown. What is likely to happen as a result of these new maps?
Let's start with the state Senate because it's simpler. Republicans will lose their supermajority. There's 4 competitive seats among the 16 that we're voting for, all the even-numbered Senate seats. And Republicans are defending all 4 of those. They'll likely lose 3, and then the 4th one is going to be really close. That's the one, the 8th district, that's in the northern Milwaukee suburbs that many of these listeners will have seen ads for.
What about the Assembly? Because that's a much more unwieldy.
All 99. Yeah. So there's so many stories you could talk about there. But to really sum it up, you know, unlike in the state Senate where we only elect half the seats, because we elect all the seats in the Assembly, there is a chance that Democrats could win a majority. The forecast I've seen put it at, you know, maybe a 30, 32% chance, 1 in 3, let's say. But the Democrats will definitely win a lot more seats. You know, even in a bad night, they're going to win 45. And in a good night, it could be 50, which would be a majority, or, you know, the high 40s or something like that. And so depending on how closely divided that chamber is, even if it's a slim Republican majority, we might see a lot of changes. We might see a new speaker. We'll certainly see, I think, a different relationship between the two chambers.
Mm. So let's dig into where that kind of wiggle room is. We've talked about this previously. Even though Democrats are likely to pick up a number of seats, there aren't really that many competitive races. There are some, though. So let's look at them.
Yeah. So there's 2 Assembly seats in the Milwaukee area that are pretty competitive. The 21st, that's like Oak Creek into the southern part of Milwaukee. Jesse Rodriguez is the Republican incumbent there. Then we have a rematch between Bob Donovan and Luann Byrd in the 61st district, which is the southwestern Milwaukee suburbs. Those are really the only 2 in the Milwaukee area that I'm watching closely. Then there's the Sheboygan district. There's 1 around Nina and Menasha. There's a couple in the Green Bay suburbs that are just razor thin between the 2 of them. Wausau is going to be competitive. There's a couple seats in the Eau Claire area. There's 1 in the St. Paul suburbs. If Democrats pick up that one because it does lean Republican, that'll be a really good night for them. But that's sort of one you can pick out as, you know, check in on that seat on Tuesday night. It's the 90th Assembly District. And if it's close, that's probably a good sign for Democrats. And then the La Crosse area has a competitive seat as well, the 94th district, which is represented by a Democratic incumbent who's had success at running better than Democrats at the top of the ticket had. So you'll notice that Madison is not really represented on that list. There's a lot of safe Democratic seats. The one exception to that is probably the Todd Novak seat over there, where he's maybe arguably the most moderate, one of the most moderate members of the Republican caucus in the assembly. And he has kept on winning in that seat in the past, even when Democrats did well at the top of the ticket. It'll be interesting to see if he can pull off that kind of underdog victory again this time, because the district has become even more Democratic leaning under the new boundaries.
One of the things I noticed, because I looked at your analysis of some of these races, is they vary widely in how many points somebody might win by. So, you know, one district, I remember Bob Donovan's was like +2 Republican, but then there were others that were more like +10 Republican, +10 Democratic. And I wonder why these are still considered competitive. Is it that these are really just smaller races, and so it comes down to, you know, 200, 300 votes? Is that why they're still competitive?
So, you know, obviously the closer you get to that 10-point lean, the less competitive it is. But when I've looked at the last decade or so of assembly races, that's about the biggest swing that we see is 10 points, which is to say like a 55% to 45% race, that would be a 10-point swing. So we do see those happen occasionally, which is why I include them in the list. Obviously, they're less common than in a race that's, you know, only divided by 2 points. Beyond 10 points, it's pretty rare to see a race move that much.
Sure. But these are essentially just smaller turnout because they're smaller elections versus, you know, if we were talking about a 10-point difference at, you know, the U.S. Senate race, that would be wild.
Yeah. Right. So I think the reason why you can see those bigger swings is because in these assembly races, which have about 60,000 people in each district, fewer adults, fewer voters, the races are small enough that more of the voters are making their opinion based on an actual experience they have with that candidate. So you do see a bit of ticket splitting, less than you used to, but still some. And so you can sometimes get slightly surprising results in those races. The Bob Donovan-Lou Anne Byrd race is an example where Bob Donovan actually did quite well in that race compared to other Republicans who were running for governor or Senate.
Sure. There are some congressional races, of course, that are happening in the state of Wisconsin. Are there any that you're really watching?
The congressional map is less interesting than the state legislative one, the fewer competitive seats. But the 3rd District in southwestern Wisconsin has gotten a lot of spending. This was held by Democrats for a long time. Ron Kind retired, and he was replaced by Derek Van Orden, who won that seat by a closer margin in 2022 than expected. National Democratic organizations who fund a lot of these campaigns have kind of written that seat off as Republican, and then it was so close, there was a lot of anger on the part of Wisconsin Democrats that the National Party hadn't taken that seat seriously. And so this time it's been quite closely contested, at least in terms of the dollars that are being spent there. On the other hand, we've seen the Republican Party under Donald Trump do very well in rural areas. So if that swing continues, then I think Van Orden will win easily. If Democrats are able to turn the tide on that a little bit, then that could be an interesting race to watch late into the evening.
What are your expectations for Election Day?
So the polls close at 8. I think we'll start seeing the first results come in at 9. I think some people maybe don't know this, a sort of weird thing about the way elections are administered in much of the country and in Wisconsin is that the results are only reported by each of the 72 counties on election night. So the only reason we know who's winning is because news organizations go to each of those 72 counties, whether online or sometimes in person, and find out what the election result is. But the Wisconsin Election Commission, the state agency, does not know for weeks after the election how those counties have voted. So anyway, that's just some inside baseball of how the vote gets counted and why you do need to go to the New York Times or your local newspaper or CNN or something like that to see who the winners are.
WUWM,
that's right. Do you guys have the AP feed? Is that how you do it? Nice, yeah. So WUWM, great choice. The city of Milwaukee is going to have a ton of ballots to count at their central count location. And in an interview, the head of the Milwaukee Elections Commission said that she expected them to finish probably after midnight. I think the race will be so close for president and maybe Senate in Wisconsin that we'll likely need to wait until all of the city of Milwaukee ballots are in to know who the winner will be. So I expect that to happen sometime very early Wednesday morning.
Okay. But you expect to wake up then on Wednesday and have a general idea of how the election went?
Well, me personally, I'm not going to bed. But yes, for those of you who are getting some sleep, I think you'll know the winner in Wisconsin on Wednesday morning. Nationally, that may not be the case because there are some key states that count mailed-in ballots that are postmarked by Election Day, and so they have to wait until those ballots have arrived to know what their final total is. In Wisconsin, they have to receive the mailed ballot on Election Day.
When we're looking at specifically state politics here in Wisconsin, how do you think things are likely to change as a result of this election?
So Robin Voss, the Republican Speaker of the Assembly, is going around saying that if they don't win at least like 55 or more seats, the Republicans in the Assembly, that he's out as Speaker because of this group of kind of far-right election denier Republicans in the chamber who hate him and won't vote for him as Speaker. I don't know if that's true. I'm not going to second guess Robin Voss's own headcount of his caucus. But if there's a slim Republican majority in that chamber, which is very possible given the map, it could be a totally open speaker fight in that chamber, which I think is, it's so hard to know how that's going to go. Something like that hasn't happened for a long time. And the person who gets chosen to be in that role will have a lot of control over if bipartisan legislation is brought up for a vote or if they would be to take an approach more like the House of Representatives and Congress where there's just gridlock. On the other hand, if there's a slim Democratic majority in the Assembly, I expect that they will vote on a lot of their sort of ideal legislation, even though the state Senate, which will still be controlled by Republicans, won't pass such a thing. But, you know, they'll do it to make a point, I imagine. And in any case, Tony Evers is going to breathe a little easier because the Republicans will lose the supermajority that allows them to impeach his cabinet officials in the state Senate. They'll no longer have that ability after this election. And Republicans don't have a supermajority in the Assembly right now, but they're so close that if not enough Democrats are able to make it back to the Capitol for a vote, theoretically they could override a veto. And the balance will be much more even after this election, making that not really something for the governor to worry about.
All right. Well, we'll see what the future holds. John, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
John Johnson is a research fellow at Marquette University's Lubar Center.
This is Capital Notes from Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Ayan Silver. We're just ahead of the very consequential 2024 election. A good time to check in with J.R. Ross, editor of WizPolitics.com. Hi, J.R. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so early voting is over. People need to either return their mail-in absentee ballots to their clerk's offices by 8 p.m. tomorrow or vote at the polls. Wisconsin isn't one of the 31 states with party registration, so we don't know if people are voting are Democrats, Republicans, or independents. But is there anything you've been able to garner from early voting returns this year, JR?
Well, we're still waiting for Elections Commission to have like the post-weekend update on early voting, absentee voting, so I can do like a deeper dive in the numbers. But the trends we were seeing kind of in the last week have been kind of consistent all through the week, which were, we have these kind of key areas of Wisconsin, right? We call them the Bow Counties, Brown, out of Game, Winnebago. Those were about the same share of the overall early vote compared to 2020. The Wow Counties, your Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, they were a little bit higher than they were in 2020 for the overall share of the vote. Dane County, pretty much on target. Milwaukee County was a little behind, and that was particularly in the city of Milwaukee. Now, again, those last days, there was early in-person voting Saturday and Sunday in Milwaukee. I want to get those numbers, do a little bit of a dive there and see if that helped catch them up. And, of course, there's also Election Day voting. But what I'm picking up from people is, one, it's hard to do a true comparison of 2020 because it's such a different election. Done during a pandemic, 3.3 million votes cast, 2 million of those absentee. Of the absentee ballots, only a third cast early in person. We typically do more in-person early voting than by mail. So, okay, there's one thing. Two, we're not going to have, we don't think we will, unless there's a huge surge in the final days, the same number of absentee ballots cast this year compared to 2020. So that's a little bit different. But that said, that share of the vote is at least a benchmark to go, okay, they're running about what we expect them to. Now, the key is not just the share of the vote, but who's actually voting. So when I look at like a Washington County, for example, we have seen their voting as a bigger share of the overall early vote than they were 4 years ago. But if those are reliable voters who vote every election, like spring, fall, special, et cetera, they were going to turn up, you know, on Tuesday no matter what to vote. They're not a new voter. They're a reliable voter. That's not really adding to the Republican column for, you know, exceeding the vote from 2020. So, but looking up in rural outstate Wisconsin, we're seeing some signs of low propensity voters coming out, registering. That's good for Trump. We're seeing signs in Dane County of low propensity voters, which are read to be college students, which typically, and I stress typically, tend to vote more Democratic. If that is the case and they are voting in big numbers for Democrats, that's good for Kamala Harris. And then through the end of last week, now I'm a dork about this stuff, I fully admit that, and I dive in these numbers all the time, but I don't have the information that the parties do where they know they have a voter file and they rate you, you know, how likely you are to be one of them versus one of the other side. You know, if you're a likely voter, like every election, or if you turn out once every 4 years, like they have breakdowns. I'm hearing from my sources that through the end of last week, the electorate was a little bit more female in the early vote. Now, if passes prologue, women tend to vote more Democratic in Wisconsin and elsewhere. We've seen a huge gender gap this cycle. So that could, and I stress could, be a big deal for Democrats. But in the reality is, we're kind of trying to figure things out and talking to my sources. Democrats would go, this makes me feel good, this makes me feel nauseous. Republicans would go, this makes me feel good, this freaks me out. So they're all seeing good things and also not great things. So again, we're waiting to see that final vote till tomorrow. And, you know, really Wednesday, when this is all said and done, we can count on the ballots. We can go, okay, this is what happened. It'll make total sense. The signs will be like, oh, the electorate was more blank, ergo, that's why candidate X won. It'll all make sense. The signs are there right now, whether it's the things are good for Democrats or good for Republicans. We just don't know if those signs will turn into votes that'll push either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump over the top in Wisconsin on Tuesday.
So, you know, we've been talking about, you know, election results, what we know so far, what trends you're seeing. Can you give us sort of like a how-to manual of what you're watching for in Wisconsin as election results roll in tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'll give you two good things to go look at, okay? So again, dork that I am, I've got a spreadsheet on my computer that has the past performance by county in some key places. So what to want you to look at tomorrow night are Dane County and Waukesha County. Now, the joke, crucial Waukesha County has been around in politics in Wisconsin for like two decades. It is very important, but it's just part of the puzzle. Still, there's a benchmark there. If I am Donald Trump, I want to make sure I get past 60%. I wasn't in 2020. I got just, and I mean just shy of 60% of the vote. If I get to 61%, I feel okay. Ron Johnson, winning by 1 point statewide in 2022, got 62.5%. So that would be even better, right, for Donald Trump. Now, in Dane County, Joe Biden got 75.5% of the vote there in 2020. In 2016, Hillary Clinton got 70.1%. Now, that includes third-party candidates, so, you know, a Jill Stein type, you know, maybe got to share the vote there, that kind of thing. But anyway, looking at tomorrow, if you look at the county clerk's website around 9, 10 o'clock Tuesday night, and you see that Dane County is going 77-78% for for Kamala Harris, that's a good sign for her and a bad sign for Trump. So Trump, he got about less than 23% 4 years ago. If he gets there 24, that's really where he wants to try to cut in that margin there in Danca. So watch those two. Those will give you a good flavor. They usually come in not early, but fairly early. We're going to be waiting on Milwaukee again. A couple weeks ago, we talked to the election officials there. They were optimistic they'd have a result, you know, not long after midnight. Now, how long after midnight, we're not sure, but, you know, wouldn't it be 5 a.m.? Now that we're seeing all these early votes come in, we've eclipsed 87,000, I think. That was a Friday, early votes, both by mail and in person in Milwaukee. That's going to slow things down. That means you're talking more of a 2 to 3 a.m. type count. Now, I'm internally an optimist. I would love to see it be done before that so I can get some sleep. But if that's the case, remember, Milwaukee does not report any of the early or any of the central count absentee vote returns until it's all done. They do it in one shot. So what'll happen is you'll see a blue surge more likely than not for Kamala Harris sometime in the early hours Wednesday, where those Milwaukee votes will come in, and a place like Green Bay and a Kenosha, they have central count too, and a Wauwatosa. When those come in, things will get bluer. So prepare yourself, however you're rooting for things to go tomorrow, that the returns early will seem fairly good for Trump. It'll get a little more purpley as the night goes on, especially when Dane County comes in. And then you've got that wait for Milwaukee. Whenever the city finishes up its central count with absentee ballots, it should bluify the results. I think I made up a word there. But things get more purpley. The question is, what shade of purple? Is Milwaukee comes in, Trump's still ahead, that probably means he's going to be okay. If Milwaukee comes in, Trump's behind, well, 4 years ago, Milwaukee came in, then Green Bay came in, and that put Biden to the top. So that's what I'm kind of watching for as the night goes on tomorrow.
And we've been talking a lot about the presidential race, but control of Congress is also at stake in this election. And as NPR reports, Democrats have a 2-seat Senate majority currently. Republicans in the House have a 4-seat majority. So it's just really a small number of contests that are really going to decide which party controls both of these chambers. What are the key congressional races to watch in Wisconsin right now?
So congressional races, there's really only the third in Western Wisconsin is being contested. The first, there was some efforts there by Democrats to make that a real race with Brian Stile, the congressman, and Peter Barca, the Democrat, who's a former revenue secretary, state lawmaker, actually represented that district like 30 years ago. But there's a group called the House Majority PAC, aligned with Democrats. It had 2 weeks of TV reserved that district. It pulled them all those reservations off the air. That tells you that they don't think there's a shot there to beat Stile. Now, miracles do happen, but usually you follow the money. That tells you that they're not confident in Barca's chances down there. Over in Western Wisconsin, it's not as good a seat on the numbers in some ways. It's a Trumpier district. But House Majority PAC has got $4 million on the air last month. They're actually outspending the Democrats. If you had Rebecca Cook, the Democrat, the group's backing her, they're outspending Derek Van Orden, the Republican lawmaker, and his groups by a healthy chunk. So there's a commitment there, that district still. You need the top of the ticket to do well for you, probably if you're Rebecca Cook. Again, a little bit of a Trumpy Republican-leaning district. So if Harris wins Wisconsin, that improves Rebecca Cook's chances. If Harris were to win by a couple points, it would help Rebecca Cook out a whole lot. But, you know, that's a tall order. Like I said, we're seeing these polls, and they're all dead even. So barring something moving the electorate a little bit, one way or the other, if it's a jump ball, it makes it that much tougher for Rebecca Cook to win that seat.
And you don't think these latest, you know, how do you interpret these latest spurts of news in the cycle that's been going on about comments that are coming out at rallies, whether it's about Puerto Rico being a floating island of garbage, or Biden's response about garbage, or comments about Liz Cheney's lack of war experience and that she should face 9. I'm kind of paraphrasing these comments, But there's been all sorts of comments like that.
It's the point we reach every cycle where it's okay, how do we gin up as much outrage as possible to inspire people, maybe inflame them, if that's the word to use, to turn out. They're trying to find any gimmick they can to say, look what these other people are saying. You have to go to the polls. They don't want anybody to be unmotivated who's on their side. So if they can find any tool they can use to get somebody to turn out, they're going to use it. That's just the way it works in politics. And so every time there's a gaffe, perceived or real, they're going to use that to their advantage in these final days.
And do you, can I ask this, do you have any, you know, advice on how people can get past their partisanship, like after this election beyond? I mean, you're someone that talks to Republicans, talks to Democrats, talks to people from all different political perspectives. Do you have any insights into that?
Well, I think Irish whiskey helps. Just a recommendation that from my personal experience. But, you know, it is, I understand as somebody who, my joke is I hate both sides equally after doing this for 25 years. You know, I try and do my best to understand both sides and listen and see their point of view. That's how I have my conversations and have done it for a long time with both sides. I don't know if others have that patience or interest, but that's what's worked for me.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks for that, JR. As a reminder, people can get information on this year's crucial races at wuwm.com/voterguide. And you can look up what's on your ballot at myvote.wi.gov. As always, thanks for the backstory, JR, and thanks for joining me on Capitol Notes.
Hey, good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
WUWM will be with you every step of the way on Election Day. You can find explainers and the latest updates on our Election Day blog starting tomorrow morning. You can use our voter guide to learn about the candidates you're voting for and what's on your ballot. Plus, we'll bring you live coverage in the evening as results roll in. You can stay in the know at wuwm.com/voterguide or right here on 89.7 WUWM. In about 15 minutes, we'll speak with a group that's been encouraging young people of color to vote in tomorrow's election. But first, a question will appear on your ballot that could change the state constitution related to voting. We'll explain what it is, coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Tomorrow on Election Day, voters across Wisconsin will weigh in on a proposed amendment to the state constitution. It's a question on the ballot, and it's related to voting. The proposal would add language to Wisconsin's constitution that says only U.S. citizens over the age of 18 can vote in federal, state, local, or school elections. It's already illegal for non-citizens to vote in Wisconsin, but some Republicans say this referendum change would keep that from happening in the future. Anthony Chergosky spoke with WUWM's Lena Tran to break down the ballot measure. Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse.
Just to start, you know, Wisconsin voters have seen some different questions on our ballots in the past few years. What is this question doing on my ballot?
Yeah, so if we consider the process through which a constitutional amendment gets on the Wisconsin ballot, it really requires two stages. The first stage is approval by the Wisconsin state legislature. Now, that is a little different than the typical lawmaking process. The first difference is that a proposed constitutional amendment needs to be voted on twice. It needs to be voted on in two consecutive sessions of the Wisconsin State Legislature. It needs to be approved by a majority vote in both the Senate and the Assembly, and it is not subject to the veto of the governor. So some real differences there, because for a typical law, it only needs to be passed once, and it is subject to the veto of the governor. So that's the first stage, the approval of the proposed amendment by the Wisconsin State Legislature. The second stage is approval by the voters. So voters will go to the ballot in November, they'll go to the ballot box or they'll vote absentee, and they will see the latest proposed Wisconsin constitutional amendment on their ballot. And we have seen Republicans put forth a number of proposed constitutional amendments since Tony Evers was elected governor in 2018 for exactly the reason that I mentioned earlier. The governor cannot veto proposed constitutional amendments. The governor cannot prevent proposed constitutional amendments from making their way to the ballot. So in a time of divided control of government with a Democratic governor and Republican majorities in the Wisconsin state legislature, we have seen a real uptick in Republicans using the constitutional amendment route as a way to circumvent the veto pen of Governor Evers.
Mm-hmm. And this November in particular, voters will see a question related to voting and non-citizens. What is this question all about?
Yeah, it says that only citizens aged 18 or older and those who are a resident of Wisconsin may vote in national, state, or local elections. Now, this is already true in Wisconsin. It is already true that only citizens may vote. But Republicans argue that this amendment is necessary to head off potential efforts by local governments to enable non-citizens to vote in local elections, for example, school board elections. Republicans point to examples around the nation of local governments aiming to open the way for non-citizens to vote. So this, I mean, it's nothing new that non-citizens would not be allowed to vote in federal or state elections, and there are not any cases in Wisconsin in which non-citizens would be able to vote in local elections. But Republicans argue that this is necessary as a preventative measure to discourage local governments from even going down that route.
Mm-hmm. So a yes vote in this case means, yes, I want this added to the Constitution, and a no vote means, no, I do not want this added.
Yep, a no vote would mean maintain the status quo, and a yes vote would mean adding this element of the Constitution saying that only citizens may vote in federal, state, and local elections.
So it sounds like nothing would change practically if this passed. How often does this actually happen, you know, for Republicans to have these concerns about non-citizens trying to vote in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so Democrats have accused Republicans of playing into conspiracy theories and playing into doubts about elections. And we know that this occurs in a context in which the Republican Party has focused on issues of elections, certainly in the aftermath of the 2020 election. So you're absolutely right. Practically speaking, this would not change anything in Wisconsin should this amendment be approved. But again, Republicans argue that this is part of a broader effort to secure the integrity of elections. They argue that this is part of a broader effort to ensure that only people who they say, you know, the only people who are citizens can vote in elections. But as noted, Democrats claim that Republicans are fanning the flames of election-related conspiracy theories as they put this proposal on the November ballot.
Mm-hmm. I guess also the national context, it's hard to untangle this from the backdrop of, you know, immigration and the border being a huge issue in this year's presidential election. Do you feel like that's also a part of the conversation here?
Yeah, to me, this constitutional amendment is much more interesting regarding what it says about the broader political context than any practical effect or any concrete way that this amendment would change the conduct of Wisconsin elections. And I think you noted a very important piece of the context, which is the context surrounding immigration. And we've already talked about that other piece of context surrounding the way Republicans view elections and the way that Republicans talk about what they often call election integrity. So I think the context here matters more than any tangible outcome of this amendment vote might matter. And Republicans have said that they want to continue using constitutional amendments in Wisconsin, in spite of the fact that they experienced a setback in the August election, where two of their proposed constitutional amendments were voted down in the August primary. In spite of that setback for Republicans, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said that the Republican Party should double down on constitutional amendments and continue using them. And So that'll be very interesting to watch. Of course, a lot of this hinges on the outcome of the November elections, because if Republicans lose majority control of the state assembly, then they will lose the opportunity to propose and advance constitutional amendments. So Republican leaders, including Speaker Voss, say that they want to push forward on putting more constitutional amendments on the ballot. They want to push forward on efforts like the one we're seeing this November. But that effort, their goal of continuing to use constitutional amendments, will hinge on the outcome of the November 2024 elections and the balance of power in the state assembly.
Sure, sure. Do other states have language like this in their constitutions, or is Wisconsin alone in this respect?
We have seen a number of states move in this direction because of that broader political context that we've been talking about. So Wisconsin is not alone in the type of issue that we're seeing on the ballot in November for the constitutional amendment. It's very much part of a broader political movement, particularly inside the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, Republicans' interest in advancing these constitutional amendments. Can you talk about who is against this and who's been vocal against this referendum?
Yeah, we have seen Democratic leaders speak out against the proposed constitutional amendment on citizenship and voting. Basically saying that this is unnecessary, that it stigmatizes people, and that it feeds into conspiracy theories about elections. So for Democrats, it seems like their opposition to this amendment isn't so much based on the substance of the amendment as it is their critique of the Republican political strategy behind the amendment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Cool. Is there anything else that you would like to mention?
Yeah, I am deeply skeptical that this will drive voter turnout or at all affect the outcome of the November election. I do think the constitutional amendments on the August ballot did drive voter turnout. They did drive voter engagement, and they did so in a way that really advantaged the Democratic Party's side of the constitutional amendment debate that we had over the summer surrounding the amendments related to Governor Evers' power to direct certain types of federal dollars. Now, those amendments drove the political dialogue for the August primary because there simply wasn't much else on the August primary ballot. And in fact, the constitutional amendments in August were the only thing on the statewide ballot. So the difference between the August primary and the November election is night and day. Wisconsin remains pivotal in the presidential election. There is a competitive U.S. Senate race. There are competitive U.S. House of Representatives races in certain parts of the state. And as we noted, there is a vigorous battle for majority control of the state assembly. It's hard for me to see how there's going to be much attention paid to the proposed constitutional amendment in November, given everything else that's on the ballot. For the August primary, Democrats were able to get their message across because there wasn't so much clutter, if you will, in the political environment. But there's going to be so many things voters are going to be asked to pay attention to in the November election that I just can't imagine that voters are going to pay much attention to the proposed constitutional amendment. And that means that voters are going to have to rely on the text that they see on the ballot. If they don't know a lot about this issue going into their November ballot, voting in person or absentee, if they don't know a lot about this constitutional amendment question in advance, then they're really going to have to lean on the text on the ballot. And in Wisconsin, that text can be highly technical. It can be difficult for people to understand. So I think that's what I'm watching as we head towards the November election.
Yeah, lots to look forward to this November.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure, Lena. Great to talk with you again.
Anthony Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. He spoke with WUWM's Lena Tran. A new season of Bubbler Talk is on the way, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Coming up next, we'll speak with leaders igniting transformation to learn about their Get Out the Vote efforts. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Many people in Wisconsin, especially in the metro Milwaukee area, will have had a few knocks on the door this election season. The campaigns, parties, partisan and nonpartisan groups have all been furiously engaging in get-out-the-vote efforts. Leaders Igniting Transformation, also known as LIT, is one of those groups. It seeks to mobilize Black and brown youth. Volunteers for that organization have isolated the metro Milwaukee neighborhoods with the highest number of young people of color, and they've knocked on doors there more than 600,000 times this election cycle. To find out more about those efforts, WUWM's Mayan Silver speaks with Christabel Martinez, LIT's Senior Civic Engagement Manager.
So we do outreach with the Black and brown community. So our efforts have really been, Milwaukee, geographically speaking, there's like Northside, Southside, been very intentional about talking to voters in the communities that we serve.
And you're doing things like answering questions about polling locations, the voting process, voter eligibility, what's on the ballot. You also have a nonpartisan bilingual voter guide. What is the messaging this year to voters?
So we want voters to know, that LIT, Leaders Igniting Transformation, is here for our community, not only during like election season, but we're also providing like year-round civic engagement and organizing opportunities for folks to become engaged with our different programs for our different departments. When we're talking to voters at the door, we're talking about, well, first, one and foremost, talking about the organization, the type of work that we do, why we do the work that we do, and also talking to voters about the issues that they most care about. We're very issue-based and value-based as an organization. We don't endorse candidates, but we are very heavy on issues, and talking up to voters about those, why they care about those particular issues, and then really tying in like the importance of those issues and how it connects to like local and state and federal elections and the impact with like policymaking. But also incorporating and answering questions about finding their polling location, if they are registered, are their family members registered, do they need help with that?
What's the vibe this election? What are you hearing on the ground from young people?
Our young people are, I believe, more engaged and enthusiastic, but also we hear that although there has been like a shift in enthusiasm, with the most recent changes and announcements with campaigns, there's still the importance of accountability. I think those are like one of the main things that our young people we've been hearing, and also how critical this election is for Wisconsin, but also like our nation as well.
And, on that note, you mentioned federal elections, and I know you're very focused on local issues, whether that's getting Milwaukee Police Department out of MPS or focusing on, economic and racial equity, criminal justice reform, things like that. So your policies that the organization supports is on the progressive side. What are you hearing when it comes to this presidential race? I know you're not endorsing a candidate, but are you hearing from voters, from these young voters, that they're excited about voting for president this year?
Yeah, I think it's all around just kind of with like redistricting also in Wisconsin. Yeah, I do think our young people are excited to go out and vote for like the federal presidential race.
Have you talked to people that maybe were considering sitting out and are now going to go vote, or maybe might vote for president and they weren't going to before, things like that?
Yeah, we've definitely heard that. I think it comes down also to like political education, and again, kind of like connecting those dots for folks in our communities, and like why it's so important to participate in the elections, you know, are putting your vote out there is your voice and can create that change. And like, not only in the short-term period, but like the long-term period as well.
Is there anything that's surprising you and other people from Lit as they do this door knocking and canvassing this year in this presidential election year?
You know, I don't really feel like there's anything. I think for me, what I find like the most like joy in is just seeing how young people are organizing across Wisconsin and really using social media as a way to like push and like relate to young voters as well within our organization. I feel like in that sense, there's a lot of like momentum going and enthusiasm and engagement of our young people. And so in that sense, I don't know. I don't want to say if it's like surprising because again, like, you know, also being a young person myself, like, you know, young people care about not only our current issues, but like the future as well. And so I think it's just a testament of how powerful young people really are. And like, we see what's happening in our community. And in any way that we can, we're actively engaging and becoming part of that bigger movement for, again, not just our generation, but generations to come as well.
Are you hearing more and more young voters of color this year also talk about what's happening in the Middle East? Is that playing into the issue for people?
I mean, yeah, we don't endorse any candidates, but that is definitely something that we've seen across campuses of like our young people, you know, taking action on campuses regarding, you know, whether universities support certain policies and stuff. But yeah, that's definitely something that's come up in terms of like Lit, why it's so important with like the programming that we do offer with like our Civic Black Hogwarts program that teaches not only about like organizing like history and the importance of it for the United States, but abroad. And like movements have been ongoing for, you know, centuries and decades, and because people want to see change. And yeah, and how we talk about where it all stems from, you know, when we start talking about the isms and systems and oppression and all of that.
So, you know, factoring into grassroots organizing, it's been an issue. When you talk to people door to door, like young voters who may not already be involved, is this something that's factoring into their decision making? And is this something that you're hearing is turning voters maybe away from the Democratic Party? What are you hearing anything like that?
At the doors, not necessarily. I think we've seen more of that activism and response through like our college students.
So in 2020, Wisconsin had the highest youth voter turnout among 18 to 24 year olds in the country, followed by Michigan and District of Columbia. From what you're experiencing and feeling on the doors, do you think that that's something that's going to continue?
Absolutely. I definitely do think that we're going to see even bigger numbers for youth voter turnout. And again, that's kind of like the intention and like of like why we are very intentional about door knocking in the areas that we are to get that vote out. Or to get the vote out, but again, also continue to like inform our communities on what's happening at the local level, state level, and federal level, and again, how that all ties in together.
And do you think there's like a secret sauce to Lit, like that there's some, you know, that there's something that you're bringing to this conversation for these young people to get people excited and mobilized?
I think for us, what makes us unique is the fact that this organization is being led by young Black and Brown youth, and we're talking to other young Black and Brown youth as well, right? Where we have the lived experiences, all of us have different, you know, backgrounds within like organizing from like where we might have started and like now, you know, are leading the organization forward. And like people to come after us too. But I think that's kind of what makes us stand apart in the work that we're doing with like organizing and mobilizing on people. Cause it's like, we can relate, right? We've seen things happen. yeah, we've lived through like a pandemic, you know, lived through like the 2016 presidential election and before that and like all of the history. And like, we've seen things that worked that didn't work. And we bring that young perspective, that energy, and have learned from like our elders as well. So, and also tapping into folks, you know, who have done this work even before we started doing this work. And I think that's, again, we're able to kind of be the bridge builders in a way of seeing like what happened with like other generations and like people, again, like maybe younger than us and like the in between, and just really hearing folks out, learning how to listen versus reacting.
Cristobal Martinez, thank you so much of Lit. Thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
Cristobal Martinez is the Senior Civic Engagement Manager for Leaders Igniting Transformation, also known as Lit. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll bring you some stories to ease your Election Day anxiety. We'll learn about the award-winning taxidermist who preserved the beloved gorilla Samson. Plus, we'll celebrate the power of women musicians. That's all tomorrow at noon, right here on Lake Effect, on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.